Welcome to the Lasting Learning Podcast. I am so glad that you're here. This is Dave Schmidto, the host of the Lasting Learning Podcast. On this podcast, we're not in search of the latest gimmicks and tricks. Instead, we focus in on the people making a difference. We learn their stories, what's brought them success, and what matters most. I hope you'll stay connected to me and to all of our guests by subscribing and sharing this with your friends. Now, let's get to it. All right, everybody, welcome back to another edition of the Lasting Learning Podcast. I am so glad you're here. This week is a pretty cool week. We've got a pretty amazing episode in store for us today because we got a cool guest who's actually joining us from his car. He's joining us from a car in Boston, Massachusetts, about 2,000 miles away from his home, where he is just traveling and living the dream. Today we've got a children's author joining us today who's been on quite the life journey, quite the career journey to get him to this car in a parking lot in Boston. So today we're gonna have the opportunity to talk to Dennis Matthew a little bit and just find out what he's about, what makes him tick, and how he got to a parking lot in Boston. So Dennis, thanks for joining us.
What's up, dude? thank you guys for having me. I'm sitting outside a Barnes & Noble, store on a parking lot. Literally had a book signing author event at this Barnes & Noble. And when David Schmidto makes time for you, you make time for him. Because I know he's a pretty sought-after guy. And so I'm so thankful to be on this podcast in this car.
Yeah, I got to pause you right there. You are the first person to ever come on here that dropped my last name, and you nailed it. So well done, man.
Yeah, I was like, I'm going to say it. It's either going to be great or I'm going to look like a fool, and I'm glad I hit it.
You went big, and you hit it out of the park, man. Well played. So other than researching me online and figuring out the phonetic pronunciation of my last name, what else do you do, man? Just tell people who you are and what makes you tick.
So I would say, first couple of things I like to say about who I am is I'm a husband and a father. My wife and my little 8-month-old daughter keep me going. I am dearly missing them right now, being on the road in Boston. It's a love-hate thing. Like, I love that I'm on the road, that I'm taking my stories to classrooms and libraries and book festivals. What never gets old is absolute strangers walking past my books and going, oh my gosh, it's Bello the cello. Like they've, seen it on a TV show or something. Yeah. Absolutely love that. But the moments that I absolutely don't like is waking up, I'm getting coffee at a Starbucks or whatever, or saw a glorious sunset in Boston the other day. And I was texting my wife going, I wish you were here, right here with me. So, it's like this, but my wife and my daughter are why I do what I do, a big reason of why I do what I do. So right now they're back home because our little one was recovering from a cold, and I didn't want her to be on the plane with me, traveling, all that good stuff. So that's a big part of who I am, husband, father. But professionally speaking, I would like to say I'm a storyteller. I'm an author, degree-wise, education-wise, I'm a speech pathologist. So I wear many hats. But right now in this phase of life, I think I'm a storyteller. I love watching people, not in a creepy way, I promise, but I just love sitting back and observing, seeing stories unravel, how people are going about their lives. I love sitting down having conversations like this with amazing people who've been through some amazing things. So I'm on a journey, and I love these crossroads where journeys with other people kind of intersect. And I'm a student of life, and I like coming across other students in life. And I just kind of, ask them, hey, what's your classroom looking like? Your classroom of life? What are you learning in this particular chapter of, or this particular season of your life? So that's who I am. I think I'm a nomad in so many ways, literally, now that I'm traveling, but I just love having conversations with people who are also on their, respective journeys.
Yeah, that's legit, man. It's it's pretty sweet story that you've already told of your own life. You talk about yourself being a storyteller. You're living life as a story right now.
Yeah.
I remember I first connected with you and your story. You were on the ShareMo EDU podcast with Eric and Renee. And I was like, oh, this guy is real. And I connected with you. You talked a little bit about Bella the Cello, but you talked a lot about yourself. And I remember you just talked about your family dynamic and what it was that inspired you to put your stories out there for people to see. That's a vulnerable moment, man. It's a leap of faith as well. And I mean, you are truly living faith incarnate right now. You are just out there on the streets, literally in Boston. Home is now in Oklahoma, is that right?
Oklahoma City, yep.
And you are in Boston with children's books. What happened in your life to get you to the point where you said, yep, I'm taking this chance. I'm going, man. I'm putting it all in right now on this.
I think the turning point, pretty comprehensive turning point, actually. I've been in the schools for 12 years in elementary schools in hundreds of classrooms, thankfully in two different parts of the country. Oklahoma City is so different from Boston. I taught in the Boston area for 4 years, taught in the Oklahoma City for about 8 years. Those communities and cultures are so different, but the common thread in all of these classrooms were children coming from very diverse backgrounds, very diverse ethnic communities, socioeconomic makeups. And I saw my story growing up as a child in bits and pieces and fragments in all of these different classrooms. I could always just walk into a classroom and identify with a child or children and kind of revert back in my mind to my, young days and think, man, I remember being in a classroom and having that moment that child's having right there. Or I remember being this kid when I was in second grade and coming from that, having a bad day like he is having right now. And so I felt it's so important for me to reach out to the underdog in today's classrooms, because I was that underdog in the classroom. And in so many ways, I don't think I've let him go, even though I'm a 37-year-old man. I still feel like he speaks through me in bits and pieces in these moments of vulnerability. And I feel like that's what at the end of the day unites us. Like our vulnerabilities, I think, bring us together to say, you know what, Dave, at the end of the day, I see a little bit of me in you and I see a little bit of you in me. And I feel it shows us how we're more alike than different with each other.
And you're not just talking hairstyle either, are you?
Yeah, there. You know what I mean? So I wanted to speak to the underdog in the classroom. I wanted to speak to these children through my stories and say, you know what? I'm like you. You're like me. You're right now in first grade, or you're in second grade, or you're in kindergarten. You're going through a tough season in life, but I've been there too, and I was able to survive that particular season, and you're going to be okay as well. So I want to send that message through my story. So Bello the Cello is a perfect example of a student who is struggling. Hope you didn't mind me segueing into that.
Go for it.
Is the perfect story of the everyday human being trying to find what's my place in this world, what's my gifting, what's my purpose. And I feel I was just talking to a mother the other day, a mother of a couple of young kiddos, and I said, you know what? We never really completely grow out of our childhood, even if we're 30 or 40 or whatever. A lot of what we do, even as grown adults, right? The template for that was set into motion when we were young children. I don't care what age you are, what line of work you're in. I've never come across a human being that is still not on that quest of how can I contribute to society? What's my place in my family, in my community? What's my purpose? And so I wanted to touch that chord, that note through Bello the Cello to the young children in rooms that are in classrooms across this country that are trying to find their life's purpose, life's song, and send the message that says, you know what? It might, even if it takes you a little bit to figure out why you were placed on this earth, what's your drum beat? Like, what's the rhythm that you march to? Like, take your time, be patient with yourself, belong to a community that will help you arrive at your life's purpose. And that's the message that I'm trying to send through all of my books. And I feel like that message not only resonates with young children, it, so many teachers and librarians have told me, listen, I read Bello the Cello to my middle school class and they got something out of it. And I feel like that message of, hey, listen, we all belong. We all have a place. We're all wired differently, but take your time to figure out how you fit in. Don't give up on yourself. Don't give up on the journey. Right? Does that make sense? I hope.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I thinking about, as a dad, I've got four kids and I love going to the movies with my kids to see their movies, like Toy Story or a lot of those Pixar movies where the target audience is much younger than me, but the theme is something that resonates with me as an adult. And that's what I love about a good picture book, a good kid's story, is that it's not just for a time and a season in a person's life. It resonates for all people of all ages. And we just throw some fun images in there and some cool characters to resonate with the kids. So you talk about Bello the Cello quite a bit here, and how one of your angles, one of your attempts is to kind of tell your story and to help kids understand that they're all appreciated. How does your story play into Bello the Cello?
Man, it can be as simple as, this did not occur to me till I was reading the book in a second grade classroom in South Hamilton, Massachusetts, and a child looked at Bello the Cello, the cover, and said, oh my gosh, Bello looks like you. Are you Bello? And then I looked at that art and went, oh my gosh, I see it. Like, not even for the color of Bello, that, because I'm a brown man, obviously. It's not even that, but I was just like, oh my gosh, like big eyes, like round features. I can see it. And subconsciously I wondered, is that why I was drawn to the cello? Is that what was going on here? But my story though, like I was saying earlier, like growing up, I struggled to fit in. I remember my first day of school was borderline traumatic. Transitions have always historically been hard for me, but I remember the first day my dad dropped me off at kindergarten, and man, it was bad. I think I cried all day. My dad had to go to work, and this one, by the way, was happening in the Middle East. So I was born in Abu Dhabi in the United Arab Emirates, completely different setup than the United States. So I've also lived in different parts of the world. I remember my first day of school, my dad had to go to work, drop me off. And as he left, I thought I was being abandoned forever. Like, I thought, my gosh, like something crazy is happening here. I was now able, you know, going to step into a new environment with completely new people, lots of new faces. And I feel like that question from my first day of school, how do I fit in? Where do I fit in? I feel like that question has taken on different faces too, as I've grown older, whether that's transitioning to college. I remember my college transition was from India to the United States. Big time culture shock. I remember having no family, no friends. Again, that same question. Where do I fit in? How do I fit in? How am I going to find my place in a completely new country at 18, right? So I think that's how my story is coming through in Bello the Cello. Ultimately, I did, and I still do, find my purpose and gifting and calling in different seasons of life through the power of community. Different people have come alongside my journey to stop and say, hey, have you ever thought about this? Have you ever thought of, you seem to be good at X, Y, and Z. Have you invested energy in here? So just like in Bello, there's a treble clef who's the classroom teacher. There's a classroom full of instruments that are gifted and wired in different ways. There's a Mr. Moon that comes alongside Bello to say, what can your song do? I feel like in my story, whether that's my wife, my sister, or my parents, have come alongside to say, you know what? I love what you're doing here. Have you thought about redoing this? Does that make sense? So it's the power of community. It's the power. It's the story of arriving at your song, with the help of people who are meant to be a part of your life. And so my message to children is, listen, no matter what you're going through, you're not alone, mm-hmm. right? You, at the very least, have 15 or 20 others in this room, in your classroom, that are also going through their own unique journeys. But again, you're not alone. Your teacher's here. Your school staff is here. Your peers are here. Your family's here. Your community's rooting for you. So it's that idea of, you don't have to try to figure out everything on your own. Don't feel left out. We're all in this together. So it's a message of belonging and identifying what our commonalities are. So
that's good. It's so good. I think, you know, there's another layer to that as well. Yeah, I think it's so important that our kids understand that they all do have these unique skills and their passions and their gifts. And sometimes it's up to others to tap into those for them and to acknowledge them and to say, you have these gifts. But I think we're also at this place right now where people, for some reason, are starting to believe that because they have gifts, they have passions, that as long as they follow those passions and gifts, everything's just going to be easy for them. And yeah, you're shaking your head. No. I mean, right now, I would argue you've got this gift for storytelling. You've got this gift for telling your story and helping others understand your story. But the work you're doing right now is hard. I mean, did you understand how difficult it was going to be? I mean, you're out there basically being a salesman at times too. You're telling a story, but you also have to sell the vision. Did you understand how hard that was going to be?
Yes and no. One of the biggest gifts, right? And I'm just gonna say, I hope you don't mind me mentioning the word or the name God in here.
Oh, you go for it.
But one of the biggest gifts that God has given me is inconvenience. One of the biggest gifts that God has always brought along, constantly, without failing me, He has brought along the gift of mistakes, failure, necessity. These things have always pushed me out of my comfort zone. So I'll give you a couple examples. Bello the cello was a concept in my mind for 10 years that I did not move my little pinky to put one letter on paper for 10 years. I just kind of put it on a shelf and I said, yeah, someday I'll get to it. But the reason why I never put effort into it was because everything was comfy and cozy. Mm. So this is when I lived in Oklahoma City. So I lived in Oklahoma City for 15 years before I don't even know if you knew this, but yeah, I transitioned to Boston after my wife and I met, and we lived in this Boston area for about 4 years. Life in Boston for those 4 years was so hard from every angle.
Yeah.
And finally, there was a period of 4 months. In being a speech therapist for 12 years, I had never been unemployed. I had always been able to find jobs easily. Sure. I think in the course of those 12 years, I'd only interviewed twice. Like, that's how easily I'd had employment at my, you know, wish. You know what I mean? Anytime I wanted a job, anytime I wanted work, I had work. But there was a window of about 4 months, 2 years ago, when I was in Boston, where I could not find work. And as a dude that's supposed to provide for my family,
I felt like
an utter failure. Like, I'd just wake up in the morning, I'd send out resumes, I applied for so many jobs, nobody's calling back. All the spots are filled, whatever. And like, waking up in the morning, and I'm a busybody, I like being busy. Like, I like to feel productive. Like, I'm doing something with my day, waking up every morning and seeing my wife go to work and then me just having to like sit home, do nothing. That was so like degrading to myself in so many ways that finally I just found myself with so much time and I wondered, what am I going to do with all this time? And out from the back burner came to the forefront, Bello the cello. And I was almost like, I heard a voice saying, what are you going to do now? Like, right? And so with no plan, no method in mind, I just cracked open my laptop and just started typing. And the story of Bello has evolved before it was published. Like, it was initially meant to be a chapter book. I remember, you know, creating this chapter book concept and then looking back at it and thinking, dang, this is boring. I had to start all over. And I remember having my aha moment about what the story was going to be about. We were on a plane. We were flying somewhere. I think we were going to see family for Thanksgiving. We're on the plane. My wife's sitting next to me. And out of the blue, I said, oh, my gosh, I have it. I have the concept for Bello the Cello. It's a classroom full of instruments. Why didn't I think about it? And, you know, my wife was like, okay, calm down. And, you know, like we were, because we've got, you know, 100 and whatever other people in the plane. So she was just like, okay, great. Let's just be quiet because we're flying, you know. So I remember when the idea, I had it. And, but all that to say, it was in difficulty. It was in necessity. Like it was in a very dry season of inconvenience because I had nothing else going on for me that I finally put the effort into. Okay, if I have nothing else going on, I might as well start typing. And that's how Bello the Cello finally started being birthed for lack of a better way of putting it. And then it was just, once I finished my story, it was, man, like dominoes, things just started falling into place. But yeah, I mean, the journey has not been easy. So once I had the story finished up, I got on Google and I was like, writing coach, because I had no background in writing. And the first link that popped up was a company called Write by Night out of New York. And I saw a number, picked the phone up, called them and said, listen, I need help with my writing. I have a script. It's very raw. And they were like, yeah, send it over. And I surely did. And they connected me up with the guy that's now my publisher. And so it was all, I feel like it's always been through difficulty, through hardship, that things worth treasuring over a lifetime are born.
Yeah.
So, my message to my friends out there that are pursuing a dream, man, if it's hard, you're on the right track. If it's taking effort to birth that baby out, maybe you're on the right track. Keep going. Don't give up, you know? Right. Go ahead, sorry.
No. I was going to respond. And as another guy, it's probably not even an appropriate thing for me to say. It's going to be two dudes. We're talking about birthing things. But I'm going to go there because I'll use a real personal story in my own life. I've got 4 kids. But when I first got married, I wasn't supposed to have any. My wife wasn't supposed to be able to have any kids. And we were going through life thinking it's not going to happen. And we went through treatment after treatment, went through IVF the whole 9 yards, thinking we're not going to have kids. And lo and behold, it's finally when you get to that point thinking it's not going to happen, kids just start coming. And you, like you said, sometimes you have to get to that dry season. You have to get to that place where, you know, it's, you got no other options. You can either believe you can do or you can give up. And I'm grateful that you gave in and you said, I'm going to give this a shot and see what happens. And you don't necessarily know where those opportunities are going to come from until you look back. You know, when I first entered into adult life, I thought I was going to live my life without having kids. And I look back now and say, okay, I can see now. I can see the path. I can see the plan that was there. I think it's probably the same thing for you. You had this idea in the back of your head, but it was a spark. You know, you didn't necessarily know you'd be traveling the country, selling books and reading books to kids. But now you look back and say, maybe that was the plan all along.
Yeah.
Maybe. And if all that hardship hadn't happened to you, maybe you would have never had that impetus to get off your butt and do something with it.
Yeah. And I feel like we discover the essence of who we are meant to be when we're really squeezed and shoved into that tight little corner. Yeah. And if there's a fighter in you, that fighter, that lion, that lioness is going to come out roaring, saying, no, I am better than this. This is not who I'm meant to be for the rest of my life. And you come back swinging, come back fighting, right? That's the greatest, like, pep talk motivation that I want to send out into whoever's going to be watching this. And whoever's watching this, you're probably in a tight corner and – you know, you're wondering where the next door is going to open. And my door's going to open from. And my encouragement to you is come out swinging with everything you got. Like, strive in your mind. Search in the corners of your mind's rooms to see, do I have an idea out there that I've been neglecting for the last 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, whatever, regardless of how old you are or where you're from or whatever, right? Man, I can tell. Here's another example of how good things come out of difficulty. I have traveled to 3 book festivals, the Orange County Children's Book Festival, which is one of the largest in the country, one of the largest ones in the country, the Decatur Book Festival, and now the Boston Book Festival. every single time I go into a book festival, the very first thought, because there's thousands of books, thousands of authors, thousands of families. And the very first thought, right? I don't think this is default for all of us. When I show up with all my books that I've been packing and bubble wrapping and putting in my luggage and hauling across the country because I believe in what I have in my hands, when I show up to these book festivals, the very first thought that comes to my mind is, man, who's going to buy Bello the Cello? Like, what? Why should anybody buy a children's book about a little cello? Well, man, to the glory of God, I can say all of my books were sold out at the book festival.
That's amazing.
But here's why. I'm in a tent with seven other authors, and we've all been given our tables and our chairs, and I'm not gonna take credit for it, I'm gonna give God the shout out again for wiring me to be this crazy dude. But like, every time I sit, you know, they give you a table and a seat to like sit and just wait for people to just walk up to you and just ask you, hey, tell me about this book. And when I had this festival like a couple of days ago, I sat down and I thought, Nobody's going to come to my table. Wow, this is the best book I've ever seen. Tell me about Bello the Cello. No one's going to come to me. So I asked my organizer, may I have permission from you to just stand outside with my books? And he was like, yeah, as long as you're not inconveniencing anybody else, yeah, by all means, you know. And sure enough, all I needed was they had a table for me. I gathered all my books. I didn't want it to be in a table. Like it's not about how pretty it is, right? So I grabbed all my books. I had a little stand-up display that was literally on the corner of a table at the corner of my tent. That's all I needed, right? And I stacked them all up and I stood there with my books, like outside my tent in a corner saying, would you like to meet Bello the Cello? These are my picture books that I wrote. Come on up. And 99% of the people that passed me did not say no to me, right? Like I sold out of all of my books to the point where people came up and I was like, yeah, I'm all out, right? But I don't think that happens if you don't step out. Like you gotta get uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You gotta get inconvenient. Dreams don't happen easy. So again, to my brothers and sisters that are watching or listening out there, man, if your dreams come into fruition the hard way, You're doing it right. Keep going. You know what I mean?
That's right. And I don't want to sit here and make this a podcast all about God, but I am going to say, I think it's powerful how you say, you know, he hardwired you, but you had to step out and do the work. You got the vision, you got the dream, but you had to step out and do the work. And I think far too often we, me included, sit back and think it's just supposed to happen for us. I have this vision. I have this dream. I've got this goal. I've got a bucket list. When are all these good things going to happen to me? You know, and I'll just mention this podcast, for example. You know, I have had some amazing people on this podcast, you included. And you know how? It's pretty simple. You reach out and say, hey, you want to chat? And 9 times out of 10, people are like, absolutely, let's do it. Let's talk. Let's, you know, and people want to help each other. People want to pour into each other's lives. People want to boost each other up. People want to see good things happen to other people.
Yeah.
You got to take that chance. You got to ask and you got to do the work. It's that simple. And I appreciate you saying that. You know, it wasn't just God blessed you with stuff. God blessed you with a heart, but you got the work ethic. You're the one that's out there talking to people, not sitting back in the tent, waiting for all these amazing things just to be poured upon you. So good for you, man.
And why wouldn't we? Why, man, I am humbled. Like, I am so humbled. The more and more I get out there, I'm humbled at the stories that I come across. Like your story itself, for example, like I feel like I'm doing journey with people that have come from diverse backgrounds. And like why wouldn't we want to enrich each other's lives with our stories, right? Check this out. I was blown away going back to the Boston Book Festival. Dude, I had no idea this was happening. So I'm given a seat, and we were given an hour, and we were supposed to share a table with another author for a book signing. So I sit, and right next to me sits a 94-year-old lady with her books. She's 94. And the sun's on us. So I said, you know, I'll pitch for your book too. Like when I, you know, call out, hey, come check out Bello the Cello, I'll speak for your book too, so that people will just come to our table. Don't feel like you have to stand up, take a seat. You know, we'll work together. Yeah, we got this. So long story short, our book sales over, yada, yada. And then I just made time. We just started connecting, just talking to each other. Come to find out, she was the very first female lawyer at Boston University back in, I forget what the year was. But I was sitting next to a trailblazer, an absolute beast. And my wife's an attorney too. She started basically opening her book. She's also an author now, 94 years old, has won some prestigious Lifetime Achievement Award. And she's a professor to this day. But she was the very first female attorney at to graduate from Boston University. She showed me her class picture. And sure enough, it's like a group of older white men. And here in the corner is this like bold woman, right? And she started unwrapping her story to me. And I was just like, I'm in the presence of greatness here. I had no idea. Like I took a selfie with her. I bought her a book. And I said, and my wife, being a female attorney, a female lawyer, she's a huge advocate and a champion for women's rights and, you know, like, you know, equal pay and all those like amazing things for women. And so like that moment with this woman, this great woman was meant to be. So I took a picture, took a selfie, got a signed copy of her book. And I sent it to my wife, and my wife was in awe. Like I said, I got you a book from this woman. You know, so all that to say, it meant a lot to my wife that I got a chance to meet this lady. All that to say, if we take a moment, sometimes we live in a very individualistic society, like that says I'm here to get mine and what's in it for me, and like I'm a believer in all that good stuff. I'm a believer in the power of, you know, being your best self and go out there and get what's yours. But man, I'm also a bigger fan of us taking a second as we're running our race and we're in our lane to take a second to look over to the left, look over to the right to find out who we're running with. And I feel like sometimes the stories of the people who are running, of the runners that we're with, just is wind beneath our wings, right? Mm-hmm. Like hearing the story of this 94-year-old woman who is still coming to book festivals and like selling books and writing. I was just like, my gosh, I want to be able to do that when I'm 90. So you know what I mean?
That's so good, man. And you being in Boston, you know, I'll relate this. I'll give another analogy. The Boston Marathon, I run marathons. And I run marathons with 20, 30, 40,000 other people. Not against 20, 30, 40,000 people.
With,
because that's the beauty of it. You know, when you know you're not going to be up at the front, you just start running with and you enjoy life with people. And that's what you're doing. I mean, yeah, you are kind of in a rat race right now, but you're running a rat race with people, not against people. And that's so cool. So I want to give you one more opportunity because you have dropped some truth bombs today, man. It's so cool.
Thank you.
It's been an epic conversation. We've talked about Bello the Cello. We've talked about your life journey. We've talked about fitting in, standing out, taking leaps of faith, following your dreams, work ethic. I mean, we've talked about a ton. So you got 30 seconds now. 30 seconds where the world is listening to your every word. 30 seconds to just drop the mic and say, boom, go do it. What is your challenge for the world?
Man, my message to anyone listening is you have meaning. Your life has meaning. Your life has worth, value, dignity, and you have a purpose. If you woke up, if you opened your eyes this morning and you woke up and you saw the sunrise, you saw sunlight, you are meant to be here to contribute to our stories with your story, whatever that story is. And my desire for everyone listening is to find out who they were meant to be and to discover their life's song, so to speak, just like Bello had to. And don't do it alone. Do it in community, wherever you are, no matter what part of the world you're in. Don't do life alone. Belong to a community. Invest the effort and the energy to belong to a family of whatever kind. You know, like maybe it's your work family, your gym family, your family, right? Put the effort to belong to a community, because Bello the Cello is very much about community as much as it is about discovering your own life song. Speaking of Bello the Cello, please check out my website, booksbydennis.com, to purchase my book. It'll be a signed copy. I also have a second book out called My Wild First Day of School. It's available on Amazon as well. These books are available on Amazon as well. Please find me on Twitter, at Stories by Dennis. On Instagram, I am Books by Dennis. And thank you so much for taking time out of your busy, busy day to listen to this dude that's sitting in a parking lot in Boston.
But you know what? The cool thing about a podcast, just like life, is that you can do a podcast with life. You can do life with other people. You don't have to take other, you don't have to add to. Just take this podcast with you as you travel, as you mow the lawn, as you're doing other things. You don't have to stand alone and do it on the side. It's something you do with, just like your message, man. Do life with. So you're killing it, man. I appreciate you. I appreciate the stories you're telling. I appreciate the wisdom you're dropping. I just appreciate your contribution to the world.
David, man, I really look up to you. We are, you know, miles apart, you know, because you being in Michigan, I believe, and I'm in Oklahoma City. I'm reading your story as it's unraveling, and it's like unwrapping as a gift for the rest of us. So thank you so much, dude. I'm so honored and humbled that you would take a minute to like have me as a part of your story, as a part of this podcast. Thank you so much, brother. I appreciate it.
You got it, man. I appreciate that. Did you enjoy this episode? I hope so. If you did, feel free to keep listening by subscribing right now to the Lasting Learning Podcast and get new episodes as soon as they're released. Interested in knowing more about me, Dave Schmitto? Well, feel free to find out what makes me tick by reading one of my books, Bold Humility or It's Like Riding a Bike. Feel free to check them both out on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or directly on my website, schmitto.net. That's S-C-H-M-I-T-T-O-U.net.